We're back. Michelle, I thought Dr. Rooney from Greater Lawrence Family Health Center was a great guest tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. 5 Emmy Awards for producing with her husband, Jonathan Bird's Blue World. And it airs on public television for the last 8 years. And it's now on YouTube. How incredible is that? That she said that they've reached over 800,000 subscribers. It was amazing. Who knew we would learn about toadfish on a telehealth healthcare radio show? It's great. That sounded so cool. I'm going to have to check that out.
Our next guest on the show with us tonight is Eileen Berquist, who works in external affairs and policy lead and is the project coordinator for CTEL, Center for Telehealth and eHealth Law. CTEL is the go-to legal and regulatory telehealth organization, providing vital support to the community on topics such as Medicare and Medicaid, private insurance payment policies, physician licensure and nurse licensure, and credentialing and privileging. CTEL has a national reputation as one of the preeminent organizations in the field of telehealth and e-health related issues. Please find more information on their website, www.ctel.org.
Thank you so much for having me.
And say hello to our sponsor, Michelle Hager.
Hey, Eileen, it's great having you tonight. I'm so glad to be here with you and Joe, and we've just had an outstanding show. Thanks so much for sharing your knowledge with us.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me, and it's great to hear your voice again, Michelle.
Let's get started, Eileen. Please tell us a little bit about CTEL. What's going on at CTEL?
Sure. We are a nonprofit telehealth legal and regulatory research organization. So we support the telehealth community through research, education, and advocacy. Our stakeholders are diverse groups, very diverse, including health systems, hospitals, practitioners, attorneys, academic medical institutions, and licensing boards, as well as telehealth-related business interests. Michelle has actually been active with CTEL for a while now, and we're very happy to have her with us.
Oh, you're so sweet, Eileen. I think the thing about CTEL that you might have been a little bit more humble about, but Joe said at the beginning, this is the go-to organization for telehealth policy and e-health law. And now in the way that we're seeing telehealth evolve, given the amount of usage that we see, both from patients and from clinicians, it's even more needed. And it's great to see the CTEL leadership in this space looking to improve and make things better and find best practices. So for those that are out there and our listeners that are thinking about how does telehealth affect them and how can I make this easier, clinicians that may be on their way to work, our healthcare heroes that we thanked in our last segment. CTEL is the place to have that conversation and to reach out. So it's one of those unknown to the general public organizations, but doing a whole bunch of work under the surface of the water, doing a great job.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, telehealth has come a long way and there's a lot of new policies. So I saw on your website there was a CTEL virtual summit planned for the end of the year, December 1st through the 4th. What are some of the topics? What can we learn? Are there any speakers planned for this event?
We actually have two in-person events a year called Telehealth Summits. The one in December is just one of them. We invite experts from all across the country to engage in really deep, substantive conversations on telehealth policy. Michelle will tell you there are no PowerPoints at our summit, which is a relief for many people. Get a lot of PowerPoint overload. We want people to have in-depth discussions. So we really focus on that and people really react to it. We are still finalizing our agenda for December, but we have some fantastic sessions this year. I can rattle off just a few to give you an idea. One of them is navigating informed consent as a telehealth provider. Another is telehealth waiver update, preparing for a post-COVID transition. Joe, you mentioned a lot of changes that have been made, and there are a lot of questions about what happens next. And then we also have a session called When Telehealth is Not Enough, Liability and Risk in Light of COVID. So those are just some of the sessions. We also coordinate Capitol Hill Days and trainings and meetings with administrative agencies. And then throughout the year, people who come to our summit also have access to webinars, working groups, networking opportunities, and technical assistance. You can get more information about that on our website, or maybe Michelle, you can talk a little bit more about your experience working with CTEL.
Oh yeah, I think that one of the things as a participant, And as a person that has attended these summits in the past, the thing that strikes me is just the level of discussion that happens at CETEL. So if you've ever been to, if any of our listeners have ever been to a virtual summit these days or a regular conference out there before COVID, then you know what that looks like, that death by PowerPoint, everybody is sort of droning on, telling you the same thing, you know, and you really can't take those nuggets away. You can't really talk through the issues that you're having today. And that's the key difference that I think happens at CETEL. You have such a group, a tremendous group of professionals that come together to really elevate the industry and have the real tough discussions about how are we going to address these topics on policy, on regulation. And now that we're so busy with telehealth, it's even more important that we do that. But it's very informative. And it's certainly an event that I have recommended to many people.
Yeah, it does sound like a great event. And that's on December 1st through the 4th. And that's a virtual summit. And you can find that online. But telehealth has seen a massive uptake in use during the pandemic. Do you see, Eileen, telehealth overtaking traditional in-person doctor visits?
I say the short answer is no, not overtaking them. For the foreseeable future, just with the technology we have, there are just certain things that you can't do virtually, in office procedures, for example. But we are seeing signs that patients and practitioners are increasingly comfortable with telehealth and the quality of care they receive. And many appreciate the convenience. So we expect to see more people using telehealth after the pandemic than we saw before.
Absolutely. And I think what we're seeing in our practice at Blue Cirrus is, you know, certainly the uptick in telehealth was somewhere in the neighborhood of the same number as face-to-face visits that they had prior to COVID. So, you know, 80 to 85% of total visits that they had previous to COVID. And that's all because the healthcare workers wanted to prevent the spread of the disease or the virus, I should say. And now that we've sort of been able to manage it a little bit more, we're seeing that tick down a little bit, and it seems to be sitting steady at about 40% of visits. So 60% still happening in person. Just as you said, Eileen, some things you can't do. You can't take blood. You can't do a throat swab, you know, over the phone. Maybe eventually we'll get to that Jetsons level telehealth. But, you know, at this point, one of the things that we see is somewhere in that neighborhood of 60-40 in-person visits versus telehealth.
You know, Michelle, I've seen your slide shows and you've been sort of preaching and teaching at telehealth conferences across the country and, you know, trying to boost telehealth. And it was more of like 15-20% was the
even
ratio.
Less, even, yeah.
Even less. So why wasn't telehealth more widely used before the pandemic?
It's a complicated question, as I'm sure Michelle can tell you. In some ways, it's a branding issue. Telehealth is called a lot of things. It's called e-health, in-health, virtual care, telehealth, telemedicine. And that means one thing to us in the business, but to the average patient consumer, that kind of inconsistent branding can be confusing. And traditionally, insurance companies haven't done a lot to market to patients so that they know telehealth is available to them or what it even entails. And then the other answer is payment. So since the beginning, policymakers have made it pretty hard for practitioners to get paid for using telehealth. At the federal level, Medicare policy was created specifically to limit the use of telehealth to very specific geographic areas, locations, and kinds of services. And it was because they had concern about cost. Some early bills in Congress were analyzed and projected a very high cost to the Medicare program. At the time and today, telehealth advocates question that analysis, but remained and remain to this day. And then state Medicaid policies and commercial payers have similarly conservative approaches to payment. So in short, if you want to have this service more widely used after the pandemic, practitioners need to get paid. And until we have permanent change implemented to expand our payment policies for telehealth services, it just won't be as available to patients.
I would add one more maybe nuance that people may not even know, but you'd think that any physician would be able to provide telehealth and it would be paid for. Well, pre-COVID and during COVID, during the public health emergency, there's waivers, but that doesn't mean the law has changed. That's just a waiver of the law.
Exactly.
And pre-COVID, which means post public health emergency, if you're a clinician that's in a rural geographic area, you may not be able to be a provider of telehealth. So your doctor in your rural area couldn't be the one who provided the telehealth service. It would have to be a quote unquote hub organization or more urban organization. So it wasn't very friendly to both urban and rural organizations. So this kind of weird geographic restriction existed between rural and urban organizations, and it still exists today from the law.
So those are great answers. Wow, that's some expertise on the show for our listeners. And it sounds like telehealth has been pushed forward by a few years and for the good of everyone. So has the government changed the views on telehealth since the pandemic started? Is it being accepted, and are we going to see some changes, and is it going to stay?
Well, even before the pandemic, telehealth had support from the administration. HHS and CMS are very highly focused on quality and cost-effective care, and they recognize telehealth as a piece of that puzzle. During the pandemic, they acted quickly to temporarily remove, as Michelle said, a lot of Medicare and other federal restrictions on telehealth to make sure seniors have safe access to care. And now they're actively looking at ways to track quality and cost during the pandemic to see, okay, what can we expand in the future that makes sense? So the administration has been an advocate for telehealth, but due to limits on the authority, they need Congress to act as well. And there are also strong advocates on the congressional side. But what we're hearing from the Hill and other sources is that the relevant committees really want neutral, in-depth cost data before moving forward. Congress can't act without strong data to show the cost impact of telehealth. We are held accountable to how much all of this is going to cost. So CTEL has been working with researchers and health systems to coordinate a massive data collection effort so that we can look into this in more detail. There's also a lot of concern on the Hill and in the Office of the Inspector General about fraud. So we're going to see them looking more closely at that and telehealth during the pandemic. That's not to say that there isn't any legislation in Congress right now or that there isn't continued support. And I do think a lot more people on the Hill know about telehealth than did before. The main piece of legislation that's been championed by many in the community is the Connect for Health Act. That's a fairly comprehensive piece of legislation that would open up a lot of access. And there have also been a handful of bills during the pandemic that would extend the flexibilities, those waivers Michelle mentioned, during the pandemic and post-pandemic, or fund research into the use of telehealth. So we can see what really works and keep funding that. Other bills aim to have more permanent expansion for specific use cases, such as mental health. So we see a lot of interest, but we might not see much movement until we can get some really good data behind this.
Yeah, and CTEL is doing a fantastic job collecting data. This is an effort that hasn't happened before in the industry, and it's always been asked. We need more information. We need more data to understand how telehealth is improving the quality of the care and improving the care that we're receiving or providing to patients. And so this is unprecedented research work that CTEL is doing really to move this industry forward. And it's so important with the telehealth services that are being provided. And let's be clear, telehealth is just a way of providing healthcare. It's a modality. It's a tool like a stethoscope, like any other clinical tool, a CT scan, anything like that. And it helps to provide additional quality of care for the patient. So that is a difference between no care in some cases and actually receiving care. Many people in all of these areas, rural areas, don't have the ability and transportation to get to a specialist. And we know that physician population shortages are definitely happening. The amount of physicians that were graduating is not keeping pace with those that are retiring. And we just saw a whole load of physicians retire because of COVID that might have stayed on and practiced longer, but they were feeling that they were at risk. So now that crunch that we saw with physician provider shortages, so that includes both physicians and nurse practitioners and PAs, all of those have become even more. So we have to bridge the gap, and we have to bridge that gap through other innovative tools to be able to provide care to these people and provide additional quality of care. So it's innovative work CTEL is doing to move the industry forward, and they should be applauded for that.
Thank you so much, Michelle. I would absolutely piggyback off on that and say, at the end of the day, telehealth is just a tool for providing care from a distance. And good telehealth medicine is good medicine. The standard of care is the same. We're really excited at CTEL about this newfound interest in telehealth, and we're looking forward to seeing how we can push the ball forward in the future and get more high-quality care to more people.
Our state senator, Patrick O'Connor, is supporting telehealth, and we'll make sure we send him a note and help get those bills passed on a positive level. And you know, we always use this show to try to give updates. And these last few months during the pandemic, you know, telehealth has been a hot topic. So we are speaking with Eileen Berquist from CTEL. Thank you, Eileen, for coming on the show with us tonight.
Thank you both so much. It was a pleasure to be here. And please, both of you, stay well.
Eileen, please be safe. We appreciate your time to speak with us tonight. We always want to provide our listeners with helpful information on this show. And I appreciate your time to join us tonight.